This is the Bates Bobcast, our weekly podcast that takes a look at the week that was in Bates Athletics. My name is Aaron Morse, and this week we look back on the pair of wins women's basketball earned over the weekend to qualify for the NCAA tournament's Sweet 16. Plus, men's track and field is sending their distance medley relay team to the NCAA championships, and it was an undefeated weekend for baseball and women's tennis. That's this week on the Bates Bobcast. Only 16 teams remain in the NCAA Women's Basketball Division III tournament, and the Bobcats of Bates College are one of them. On Friday, Bates defeated Brooklyn College by a score of 66-51 in the first round. And the Bobcats followed that up Saturday with a 79-66 win over Widener in the second round, qualifying for the Sweet 16 for the third time in program history. It was a pair of hard-fought victories, and in the Widener game, senior captain Morgan Kennedy poured in a team-high 22 points, and first-year Sarah Hughes scored 10 of her 18 points in the fourth quarter to secure the victory. They flanked head coach Allison Montgomery in the post-game press conference.
We just achieved something that we've had our sights on and believed more was more than possible. You know, like, I think we are taking a moment to just be really excited for what we've achieved thus far. But it's, you know, we've heard our players say over and over that they're not satisfied, they're not done yet, right? And this team is special. Our seniors are special, and so, you know, we want to max it out. So we want a couple more weeks. So it's that balance of really recognizing what we've achieved. It's really hard. I mean, like, everybody's good. That team came at us with everything they had. And but I think, right, it's balancing of, like, yeah, we have high expectations, and this is what we expected and what we worked for. But also soaking it in and understanding, like, what it took to be one of the last 16 teams standing.
Sarah, I feel like you're the ultimate closer in these games in the fourth quarter. I mean, what is it about you in the fourth quarter? Why is that your time to shine, it seems like?
Honestly, it's alumni gym. Everyone's showing up. Like, the energy gets going, and my teammates, we're all hyping each other up. Like, the energy is just unmatched and gets me really riled up.
And Morgan, as a senior, what's it like to see a first year be this clutch?
Oh, it makes me so proud. I mean, I don't expect anything less, though. Like, Sarah, she puts that pressure on us every day in practice. She shows out every single day in practice, and she works extremely hard. So I'm not surprised, but yeah, she's awesome.
Coach, these two matchups, yesterday and today, did anything surprise you about them? Was it about what you expected? I mean, both these teams obviously gave you a really good challenge.
Yeah, I think exactly what we expected. I think, you know, in preparing as coaches, we are kind of prepared for every angle of what might come, like understanding what teams are really good at and the ways that we're going to be challenged. So, like, we really try to prepare for that. And, yeah, I do think it's that. I do think coming from the conference that we come from, where you kind of have to play your best and you have to have a really good performance in order to compete in our conference. So I think that prepares us well for as we go down the line and play teams that, you know, we're not as familiar with. So I do think that's a challenge. I mean, sure, for coaches, but even more so for players. We just talked about in the locker room, like, within a game, you have to be able to make adjustments because you're not familiar with teams and players, right? Like, we can do our preparation, but you have to kind of figure that out too in the flow. But yeah, they both played so hard, so tough, have some really talented players. So we were expecting a tough battle in each one.
Yeah, so you guys gained the lead, like, kind of early on in the first, and you never lost it. Like, what do you think the secret was there?
I think we had, you know, we were a little bit challenged with some foul trouble. I mean, as were they. I think the game was being called really tight, but we had players come in and step up and do their job. We just talked about that in the locker room. Like, I don't think people kind of realize, if they're just watching a game, like someone like Ava James, who comes in, she knocks down two big free throws. She hits a jumper. Ava, yeah, 11 minutes, 1-for-1, you know, 2-for-2 from the free throw line, plays great defense. Like, those moments are so important. You know, Sophie came in, took a charge, hit two jumpers. So I think we had just players coming in, doing their job. We had to have a couple of possessions where, like, Morgan was playing the five and guarding their post player who really challenged us. So you have to have people step up and, you know, you have to kind of manage that possession by possession. So I think people did their job. And I just think, you know, our leadership is really, really good to maintain poise and belief and trust. Right, even like in the flows of a game when we have some adversity.
And so Mia Robbins was the highest scorer of the game on their team. She put up 26 points. Like, what was kind of the strategy of mitigating that, or how'd you?
Yeah, at halftime we just talked about giving her more space and just forcing her to shoot it, because the way the game was being called, especially just being called tight, we were struggling to contain her without fouling her. She's pretty skilled at, you know, using her body on that drive, and so we kind of just talked about, like, give her a cushion and let her shoot it, you know. And she hit a couple of them, but we felt like we also really wanted to stay out of foul trouble in general, but in that position. So we tried to do that, and I thought, you know, we made some good adjustments, and you know, she ended up with four fouls as well. So
and so all three, y'all, it's my understanding this is the furthest in program history that you've made it, is that correct?
Matched it,
yeah, yeah. In 2005, yep. That team, so that was my senior year in college, which is,
let's go.
The Bates team made it to the Sweet 16 that year, yeah.
Yeah, so what does it mean to be a part of this team, you know, after so many years and making it this far? I'll ask both y'all.
Even it's just, I was saying it in the locker room, it's just like a dream come true. Like, this is definitely probably one of, like, the most fun games that I've ever had, and like, this team is just so special. Like, the way we are with each other, the way everyone's committed, knows their roles and stuff, and I've never had like a more fun year of playing basketball. And so it's just like, I don't know, it's just, it's really nice to see the hard work and everything that we've set in preseason, like, starting to, you know, pay off.
Yeah, and like, when you pick up a basketball, you dream of like stuff like this, so it just means a lot. And like you said, like, it is paying off and it's super rewarding, and like, being a freshman and having like all this happen is just like, couldn't have picked a better place, couldn't have picked better people. Like, I just love it here.
Love it here.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, it's your birthday.
Yeah. Is it?
Can I ask how old you're turning?
25.
Again. 41 today.
Mm-hmm. All right. What does it mean to you to have this victory and to have the whole court sing happy birthday to you and all those feelings?
I was kind of like, stop, they're shouting, we turned it over in the back. we have way bigger things to celebrate than my birthday, but it is kind of like all the feels in terms of our community. Like, we've talked so much about what just, you know, I just said to the team, like, you guys doing what you love with people you love, being committed and doing it together, like, you've brought so much joy to our community, just kind of seeing the way it brings people together. I mean, that's amazing. So to me, it's more just like all those people in there having fun, having pride in our school, in our community. Like, that's really what it means. So for me, like, I mean, that was, you know, and having President Jenkins up there, just like the whole feel of community, like, everyone in that gym is connected by what these women are doing. Like, that's so, so special. So, sure, little, I mean, I'm 41, I'm going home, going to bed. but in preparing for the next round. But yeah, just another layer of, like, you know, what a great moment. Morgan and I were just debating whether this was the best day of our life, or like, close to the best day of our life. I don't know. Feels pretty darn good. So sure, eases the pain of being 41.
There you go. I have also a question about field goal percentage. Mm-hmm. It went up every quarter. For you guys, can you? It went up substantially, actually, every mm-hmm. quarter. Can you talk a little bit about what might have gone into that, making that happen, and any mindset changes or court decision making that changed?
I honestly think it's two things. I think we play fast. I think some of that is kind of like wearing on our opponent, right? Like, I just think we're used to playing back-to-back, and I think we're used to playing a certain pace. And so I think probably part of that, right, is us continuing to rise and play through that maybe when Widener was kind of struggling as we went on runs there to maintain that same sort of pace. I also just think like that's championship level stuff in terms of, I think we were doing so many good things. Like we out rebounded them by 20, right? We were so many possessions where I say to the bench, like, great shot. Like we got another O board. And so I think some of that is just persistence with sticking to, you know, what we were doing and some of the looks that we were getting and some that maybe just weren't falling. So I think it's kind of those two things. I don't know if, and like, you know, Sarah's fourth quarter genius there.
Oh yeah. your guys's field goal percentage was actually below that of Widener for this game.
Yep.
I'm wondering what kind of tactics defensively you guys were using to make sure that even though they might have been making more shots, they weren't getting as many shots.
Yeah, again, I think like the pace. So we were like really pushing. Like we always want to do that. We want to have more possessions than the other team, get more shots up. We just think that pace is going to benefit us. They have a lot of talented players, and I just thought, you know, we were really focused on guarding one-on-one rather than trying to overhelp and give up threes. They have, especially as the game wore on, because they have a lot of, they've been down in the last, like, three games that they've competed in and come back because of their three-point shooting ability. So we really wanted to minimize that. But I think at the end of the day, it's two teams, like I said yesterday, like fighting for their life. And they had, you know, some good players make plays. But I think collectively, our team was just kind of more persistent. And I think the rebounding stat made a huge difference to get more possessions.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you.
Kennedy and Hughes were huge for Bates. But our female Bobcat of the week is sophomore Elsa Delario, who tallied 20 points and 20 rebounds Friday against Brooklyn. It's the first 20-20 performance for a Bates women's basketball player since, well, we aren't sure, but possibly since 1980. Delario followed that up with 15 points and 9 rebounds against Widener. She joined us in Alumni Gym to talk about the amazing season we are all watching unfold.
Elsa, I mean, your first postseason experience, NCAA tournament, first two games. Looking back on it, what was the experience like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was so special to be playing in alumni just with such a great community coming out to support us. But yeah, the basketball, it was super, like two super fun games to play in. We definitely did see a little bit of different play from them, which did challenge us. But yeah, just overall super proud of us with how we competed this weekend.
Well, yeah, and you touched on the zone defense that Brooklyn played. I mean, that's obviously a tough defense to play against in terms of turnovers and everything, but for you, as a post player, it was great for rebounding.
So yeah.
How fun was that to pull down all those boards?
It was a lot of fun, and I think it helped us a lot, but yeah, it did put me in the position to just really play short corner on offense and be in good position to get a bunch of O boards, which was really good, but also on the defensive end, I think they were just driving to the hoop a lot, so I was trying to be there as much as I could to secure the rebound, because rebounds, they're a big part of the game, so very important for us, for our success.
Excellent. And I mean, I have to talk about the crowd we had. Obviously, a packed house. Tickets sold out within minutes when they went on sale and everything. And you've played in front of a big crowd before, but how'd this one kind of compare almost?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the biggest crowd I've played in was probably at Bowdoin for the championship game. But just something about being here in alumni in a smaller gym, so much more intimate. And, like, you know, alumni magic is real, and it's just so fun to have everybody out here supporting us. So it's just so fun.
So now you're hitting the road to Rhode Island. What, if anything, do you know right now here on Tuesday about Wartburg?
Yeah, don't know that much about them. Very different conference. So excited to see what their type of play is. I know they have some seniors, but we're just excited to get out on the road and play a little bit out of our conference again, so it should be really fun, a good game, so excited.
Excellent. Then, you know, obviously, you know, Sweet 16, I mean, could you, before the season, was that in your mind, was that, or you're just thinking, you know, one game at a time, was Sweet 16 something you were envisioning?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of our goals is to compete for the NCAA championship, and we set that in the beginning of the season, as well as the NESCAC championship, but yeah, I mean, our goals are always, we're focused on one game at a time, like you said. So just to see how that has really paid off, is so great to see, and I'm so proud of how hard we've worked all season for this.
Yeah, going back to the alumni gym, I feel like the other teams that when they come in here, they're like, they never play in front of the type of crowd, typically. I mean, like, what would see from the other team how they're reacting to all these fans?
Yeah, I mean, I think they definitely didn't like it that much. especially all the students chirping the girls, I think. I mean, I like it, but yeah. I don't know. They definitely don't. So, but yeah, I guess sometimes when you walk into this gym, you don't think that much of it. I guess if you're in a on the opposing team, but once the crowd shows up, it's just the most special.
Yeah, and you play Rhode Island College is not who you're playing in the Sweet 16, but that's where you're going. And it's possible you might play them in the Elite Eight, and you did play them last year.
Right.
Also, before they made a kind of a surprise Final Four run. So what do you remember about that game?
Yeah, I mean, our team was so different back then. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was like a pretty close game and, until the end, kind of. And they were pretty good last year as well, so really excited to see if we can play them. I know we can compete with them really well, especially with our team this year, with how everybody's contributing so much. So yeah, I think that would be a really good matchup for us.
Yeah, I mean, everyone just has contributed so much throughout the whole season. I mean, in the postgame, you know, asked us about Ava James, Sophie Spokes were able to do, like, kind of limited minutes. But what's that like to, for you to see, you know, even when you're on the bench, that other players like your backup, Danielle Adams, can make big contributions, right?
I know. It is so great just to see everybody come in and just do their job. Ava was so good in that last game against Widener. Yeah, Danny always comes in, hits her pull-up, that's her thing. Just everybody does their job, and that is all we ask for. And everybody has just really stepped up this year in their role. So especially even the freshmen too, they're just really, really doing well. So
I was gonna say, you and Danny hit those 15 footers pretty consistently. That's something that I noticed for you at least. Massive improvement really for you, I think, from last year.
For sure.
How much work were you doing on that?
Yeah, actually a lot. Yeah. In practice, in our guard post breakdown, we do a lot of catching at the high post and just facing up. Danny, that's super natural for, but I've definitely had to work on that a lot. And it's just like a confidence thing too, I guess. Just been a lot more confident shooting that mid-range shot. So yeah, it's paid off, I guess.
Great. Well, any other thoughts you want to share on the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament and what lies ahead here coming up on Friday?
Yeah, we're just hungry. We're so excited to get on the road. See some games out of our conference, get some higher competition, and we want that Final Four. So,
sounds good. Elsa Delario, Female Bobcat of the Week. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
On Saturday, the Bates men's track and field team headed to Tufts University for the last chance meet, which is, you might have guessed, the last chance for athletes to qualify for the NCAA Division III indoor championships. With sophomore Ross Tejeda running the 1200 meters, junior Truman Williams, the sprinter of the group in the 400 meters, junior Calvin Capelli handling the 800 meters, and senior captain Ned Farrington anchoring the race with the mile run. The Bates distance medley relay team put up a time of 9 minutes, 52.26 seconds. Good for second on the Bates all-time performance list. Enough to qualify for the NCAA championships. The DMR team will race for All-America status this Friday at 6:30 p.m. in Virginia Beach. But first, they join the Bobcast. Well, for the first time since 2017, men's track and field is sending a distance medley relay team to NCAAs after a great performance at Tufts, the true last chance meet, but really the first chance for this group of four this year, right? I mean, Ross, just tell me a little bit about how it all came together for you guys.
We've all just kind of decided to put the work in. You know, every single day we go into practice, and I've really built a bond with not just these guys, but, you know, everyone on this team, and I think we've all put in the work in our own right, and just, you know, combining these efforts together, it's honestly not a surprise that we made it this far.
And Calvin, you and Ross have both had really a lot of success in the 800. The DMR, you're the one running the 800, but tell me a little bit about this event and why it's been such a great fit this year for you.
Well, yeah, our mid-distance squad has been working really well together, and I've kind of just been following in Ross's footsteps, falling behind him in the 800. And for the DMR, we just decided that he would run better in the 12. I would take up the spot in the 8, and it's been working out well for us.
And Ned, I saw the celebration at the end. You anchored it there at the mile. What was that like, celebrating with your teammates after you crossed the line? Because I assume they immediately saw the time and knew that was going to be good enough, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was a completely euphoric feeling. Like, I just crossed the line. I couldn't do anything but put my arms up. Immediately went to the left into the infield, and they just, like, swarmed me. And I was like, guys, I'm dead right now. I need to hit the ground, like, and just lay down. But they were just, like, swarming me. In the video, you can see Truman just almost get, like, absolutely crushed by the three of us. But it was, like, it couldn't have been a more euphoric feeling, because the DMR, it's not just one person putting it together on a given day. It's four people need to have good races. And I think that shows with the fact that there's only 3 seconds separating the top seed in the DMR this weekend and the last seed. So, yeah.
And Truman, you have kind of the shortest leg there, the 400 meters. And so what's it kind of like from your perspective there in the middle of the race, you know, doing basically a sprint event in the middle of this, you know, relay?
Yeah, well, I've always seen the 400 as sort of the odd one out because, I mean, you all train somewhat together, whereas I'm completely separate, and it really shows in the warm-up where these three guys go on a run and I stayed on the indoor track and did my little drills, and then they came back and we were ready and I got the baton, and it didn't really feel like a massive change in pace. It felt like the baton's moving, I grabbed it, I ran, and Calvin and Ross did a really good job of handing off to and from me, being able to keep the momentum. So it didn't feel like it was a different race that we were running. It really felt really fluid.
Excellent. Well, Ross, first time on the Bobcast, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, how'd you end up at Bates, and what got you into track and field growing up?
Well, a lot of people don't know this about me, but I was actually quite the hooper before running track. My track career really started when my brother told me, hey, you should join cross country to stay fit for basketball season. And I ended up running pretty well at that, so I decided I'd start doing track as well. And lo and behold, we made it here. I picked Bates because, you know, I came up here and I really kind of just fell in love with the culture, you know? Like, everyone on this team really buys into this idea of performing and being great and wanting to reach that next level, you know? Not being afraid to compete. And this is displayed now. We can all see how, like, we've all reached this level. I view all my legs and I go, all the legs of the DMR, and I go, you know, I trust in each and every single one of these guys to perform.
Oh, basketball background then. So how, does that prepare you well for track? A lot of running there too, right?
Yeah, a lot of running. a lot of practicing.
Calvin, same question for you. Kind of your background, how you first got into the sport, and what made you want to come to Bates?
My brothers and I have been running since we were young, running like club and running throughout high school, and then coming to Bates was just. So I'm from California. So far away, I just kind of wanted a change. I wanted to see some seasons, and Bates seemed just like the best fit for me out of the schools out here in the Northeast. Just friendly people.
Great. And then Ned, I want to ask you about this because we had you on, you know, recently, and you mentioned you were very confident about the DMR qualifying for nationals at Tufts, and you did. You were there individually for cross country. How excited are you to have some teammates this go around?
I mean, the thing that happened in the fall was I unfortunately was only able to go alone and for the men's team, and then with the women.
Sure.
So I think having three of my teammates here is like, this is the dream. I told Coach Feldman in December that the distance medley is by far the event I most want to qualify in. We were kind of weighing options. Maybe we could go for the mile or the 3K. And I was like, if we have the opportunity to go in the DMR, let's do it. And yeah, like you said, last week on the Bobcast, I was pretty confident we could do it. Kind of in the middle of the week after the times got a little faster at that Wartburg meet out in Iowa, I was a little less confident. It was kind of doubting things a little bit. I can't lie about that. But I kind of knew after Ross ran his leg, I was like, we're going to do it. So, yeah.
Truman, how confident were you going in that you're going to get that time you needed?
Earlier in the week, I asked Ross what his race strategy was, and it was usually to stay to the front, and he ran this 1200 much different than that. So for the first two laps, I was a bit worried. And then the latter half of the race, he really started to push. And by the time I got the baton, we were in second, right behind MIT. So we got it, and I just ran and held on for dear life. And it worked out really well.
When you handed it off, were you thinking, we got this?
Yeah, I handed it off, and I thought, oh, my God, we're right behind MIT. And going into it, MIT was the top seed by a mile. And like I didn't want to say it out loud, but the three of us, when we finished our leg and Ned was running, we were like, we got this, we got this, we got this. And we all lined up. We were chanting, Ned, Ned, Ned. And it was just, Ned said it really well earlier. It was just euphoric.
Excellent. We were talking off here how the 1200, Ross, is not an individual event. It's literally only part of the distance medley relay. So how do you kind of approach that, especially leading off a relay like this, like you do?
You know, it's funny. After we had run the time, I was talking to Ned, and I was like, well, because Ned, first of all, for some context, Ned texts us at like 11 at night, and he goes, the Wartburg meet, you know, really, really, you know, it made it harder. It's gonna be a lot harder than we thought it was going to be. And so I go, okay, let's just do it. I just texted. I just said, let's do it. And I tried to sound confident, but in reality, I was, you know, scared out of my mind. So I stayed up for about 45 minutes on my journal, and I started writing down split variations that would all add up to precisely 3 minutes, if not under. And, you know, when we ended up hearing the splits at the end, turns out that I ran 3 minutes flat to the millisecond, which just blew my mind. But realistically, you know, I was kind of planning for that. And, you know, it's just the dedication and the love to really not just perform for me, but also for these guys, and having never run a 1200 before, that was definitely a difficult task for me to just really pace myself properly and set these guys up for success.
You're a sophomore, right?
Yeah.
I feel like you've really had like a breakout season almost, kind of. What's been the key for that for you?
You know, last year I wasn't competing at all. I was, you know, being weighed down by some injuries and, you know, really kind of losing confidence in myself. But, you know, that summer I just decided to really lock in because, you know, I told myself I'm not going to let these injuries sort of define me. And I knew when I came in this sophomore year, I was just going to put it all out there. You know, this community really embraced me, and I wanted to embrace it back.
Excellent. Calvin, when Ned sent that text to everyone, what was your reaction?
Everyone was kind of warning me. The 800 goes out quick because you get the handoff from the 400, so you're kind of at the 400 pace. And I was like, okay, so I just got to really – I was still really focused on what I had to do and how I had to stay calm in that first couple laps. I went out faster than I've ever gone before in that race, and then I proceeded to go as lactic as I've ever gone before. And kind of in that last 300 meters of my leg, I was just hanging on to this Amherst guy. I was trying not to let this gap grow any further. And there are no doubts in my mind. Like, usually in an 800, you go that lactic and you go, oh, I don't know if I'm going to finish this race. I might start walking here. But what happened was I was just thinking about my team and how there's no shot I was going to let them down. Got the baton to Ned.
Okay, so for people who aren't track and field experts, lactic, break down what that means lactic in the context of track and field.
I mean, I would just have you go run a lap of the track as fast as you can, and it's
that's what that is. Yeah.
It's that burning feeling where your legs don't move anymore. And yeah, I mean, it got to the point where it wasn't just my legs burning, my hands were tingling, and I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to hold on to this baton anymore, but we made it work.
So was it a relief when you got to Ned for the handoff?
I don't know if it was a relief. Everything was kind of black at that point.
So do you think your strategy will change a little bit for Nationals then? Or?
I mean, honestly, going out that hard is kind of great training for doing that again. So it might get out hard. I don't know. I'm just going to get out there and compete with the rest of the 800 legs.
So Ned, when you guys go to Nationals for the DMR, it's just a final. There's no prelims or anything.
That's right.
Yeah. Are there different heats or is it all one race?
All 12 teams in one race.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So that's going to be really interesting. We'll see how that goes. Yeah.
That's because that's probably a bigger field than was at Tufts, right?
Yeah. I think Tufts was only 8 teams. Mm-hmm. And also here, it's 12 teams that are all within 2 seconds of each other. At Tufts, it was like 40 second spread between the teams. So really, it was just us, Amherst, and MIT. It was a 3-team race. But this is going to be a little bit different, yeah.
The track's going to be crowded, I feel like. Like, that's...
Yeah, so I think where you're really going to see the issue is from where Ross is handing off the 1,200 leg to Truman. That's going to be a little bit sketchy because those 1,200 guys, they'll all be right with each other because it'll probably be a little bit tactical. Nobody's going to really try to run away with it. And then, yeah, you're going to be handing off to guys that are going to be fighting for the inside lane and, you know, they're running 20-something miles per hour, so it's going to be scary. But I think we're equipped for it. We've been in tactical races where we get boxed in all year long, so we're super ready for that, yeah.
Truman, how excited are you to compete on the national stage here against the best in D3?
I would be lying if I said I hadn't had that T-First page up on my laptop in a tab for the past week and a half. With almost everyone's individual page also open, I truly can't wait. And I really couldn't ask for a better team to be going with.
And Ross, I mean, for you, obviously, this is the first time nationals for everyone except for Ned, right? So what's it mean to you to be going?
You know, I'm just happy to be there, you know? I told myself as soon as I walk in there, I'm just going to soak up every moment, every single moment, and you know, talk to everyone and... Hopefully I'm back here again. I just love what I do, you know, and being rewarded for it and being recognized for it. It really feels good, Aaron. You know,
excellent. And I think it's the last event of the Friday events, if you will. So it's the last event on Friday. So Friday night, I mean, everyone's gonna be watching. Calvin, how excited are you for that opportunity?
I mean, I'm still kind of in disbelief that we made it. So yeah, similarly to Ross, I'm just gonna be soaking it all in. Yeah, it's my first time going to nationals, so it'll just be, I've heard it's a really fun experience. I'll get to see my parents there, which will be really fun to catch up with them. But yeah, that's about it. Just going to soak it all in.
And Ned, you've been for cross country, obviously, multiple times. So what's it like now breaking through on the track side of things?
It was a huge monkey on my back, I would say, for a few years. I feel like I've just been on the bubble, like ready to qualify. But I mean, there's a reason it's only 20 people that qualify. It's really, really difficult. Or in the DMR's case, actually only 12 teams. Yeah. So it's just like, oh my God, it's just such a relief to like finally get to go. And like now it's just fun now. Like there's no pressure on our team like to do anything crazy. And because of that, I think we are going to do something crazy. I was reading this article on the Stride Report. That's one of the big like journalism agencies that covers D3 track and field.
Gotcha.
And they were like, yeah, Bates might be able to get top 8 if they really have a good day. And I'm like, I think we can do better than that. So I don't think there's any pressure on us. Like, they're sleeping on us for sure. So
and top
we're just
going
to have fun.
Top 8 All-America score points, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
Excellent. Well, any other thoughts any of you wanted to share on this amazing opportunity for you guys coming up here this Friday night? We haven't got to talk about yet, perhaps?
All I'm going to say is, you know, I hope you guys tune in. I mean, we've been working hard all year, and, like, you know, These are my brothers, basically, and I'm just so excited to see us perform and to see us on that national stage and do what we do best, which is run.
Men's distance medley relay competing at NCAA Championships in Virginia Beach coming up this Friday night. We'll have the link to watch on GoBatesBobcats.com. You can check it out. And again, top 8 get All-America. Should be really exciting. Ross, Calvin, Ned, Truman, thanks so much for joining the Bobcats. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Of course, the women's basketball and the men's DMR teams are not the only groups competing on the national stage this weekend. Bates Skeen has Juliet Hoder and Olivia Cuneo at the NCAA Championships in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, and the squash teams are sending a trio of athletes to the CSA Individual Championships. As all Ned's CAC selections, Alex Spiro, Andy Mortagon, and Navya Gupta will be at the Arlen Specter Center in Philadelphia this weekend. While winter sports are in postseason play, spring sports are just getting warmed up. The women's tennis team had a strong weekend, defeating Smith College 5-4 and Mount Holyoke College 7-love. Sophomore Bella Saul went undefeated at number 2 doubles and number 3 singles, respectively, to lead the Bobcats to victory both days. Well, Bella, a really strong weekend for the women's tennis team there against Smith and Mount Holyoke. You yourself, doubles and singles, all victories. So take us through kind of what stood out to you the most about these matches this past weekend.
Yeah, well, it was our first away matches of the season that were in Florida. We went on a Florida trip for our spring break. It was a bit tough, definitely, because our number one singles player and one of our captains, Allie Friedman, wasn't playing. So we all kind of had to play up a spot. So it was definitely a tough course of matches. I played second doubles with Julia Anderson, and it was definitely a tough one at Smith and at Mount Holyoke as well. But I think that we all really grinded it out and kind of came together, had a lot of energy and spirit to kind of try and take it, and we ended up being able to come away with it victorious. So
I saw Smith was 5-4. Who had the deciding match?
Ava Lyon had this deciding match, junior. Yeah, it was a really, really, really fun match to watch. We were all kind of cheering along. It was the last match on. It was like a comeback victory. We were down, and then were able to clinch it with Ava Lyon's match, and also Ava Steinberger came in really clutch also with the win.
So it came down to all of you basically watching Ava Lyon trying to win it for everybody.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Now, have you had similar situations like that before where it's all coming down to one match? It doesn't happen that often, I feel like.
Not super often, yeah. No. We've had matches like that before last season, but this was the first one that I remember of this season. It was super electric. Probably the most, like, fun and, like, electric vibes that we've had, especially for it to be in an away match and on a surface that's very different from what we have in Merrill, which was definitely a tough thing to go through. But we all came into it super ready. We have been working on it all week on the slower surface, trying to practice being able to be on that surface, and it was really, really good for us to come through in the end and really work to get there. It was a great win, yeah.
I feel like more than maybe any other sport, the surface that you play on in tennis makes such a huge difference in just how a match can go. What do you prefer the most to play on, and then how do you adjust to surfaces you don't like so much?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm biased. I love Merrill.
Yeah.
We play on a super fast surface in Merrill, and that is obviously super great. But that means that the points are going to be a lot shorter usually in Merrill. On a court like Smith or like Mount Holyoke or like the majority of the matches that we'll be playing away this season, the ball will be a lot slower and it will bounce a lot higher also. We will definitely be in for it. It's kind of difficult to train for that in Merrill since the ball kind of skids there. But at these other surfaces, it's a bit harder. The points are going to be a bit longer. We're definitely going to have to use a bit more energy and stay in the points for a lot longer. But, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely biased. I love Merrill. I love to practice in Merrill. I love to play in Merrill. So, yeah.
Excellent. So you're a sophomore, right?
I'm a sophomore.
So take us through when you were in high school looking at colleges. You're from Brooklyn, New York, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. What made Bates the place for you?
Well, I visited in probably October, a very, very nice day, and I was immediately sold as I was walking down Alumni. I loved the community. I love the way that everything was set up. I thought that it was a beautiful campus, and then I met some of my teammates, and they also sold me, and also Coach is just amazing, and I think that all of the culmination of all of that made it like the best fit for me by far, and I'm super happy that I made the decision that I made.
And then growing up, how did you first get into the sport?
I first got into tennis over a summer. I went to a summer camp and was able to pick it up then. And then I didn't really take it seriously until I was 11 or 12. I started playing at my local park. And from there, I started playing tournaments and started doing after-school programs, which was really, really helpful for my development. And then finally, I got super into it when I was like 12, 13 and was playing multiple times a week. And yeah, from there on, I've been playing ever since, I guess.
Was that really the sport you focused on the most growing up, or were there other sports involved also, perhaps?
Mostly just tennis.
Yeah.
I never really took any other sport super seriously. I remember as a kid, I did a bit of basketball, did a bit of soccer, did a bit of track, but like it was never anything that stuck. It was kind of just maybe in PE or doing it in middle school, but tennis was the only sport that really stuck with me.
Excellent. Then you mentioned your doubles partner this weekend, Julia Anderson. She's a first year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's it been like working with her, and how's that chemistry working?
It's been awesome. Yeah, we played a lot in Florida. I think that we've each match that we've played, we've gotten a lot better. The chemistry is great. She's been a really great person to have on the team. Super, super good. Has amazing energy on court. And I think that we're going to do really, really well this season. I'm really excited.
Is doubles something you play before coming to Bates?
Probably a little bit more than some other players. Because
okay.
In junior tennis, it's kind of rare for players to be focusing on doubles, but I was able to have that experience from high school tennis and then from playing some tournaments as a junior, and that has been super, super fun. Last year, I played number three doubles with Ava Lyon for the most part, and that was super great, and I think that definitely prepared me for this year playing with Julia, so super exciting.
Excellent. Well, NESCAC play is getting started this weekend.
Yeah.
You're right away at Middlebury, at Williams. Obviously, some tough opponents.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts on going on the road? Kind of a tough road trip to start things off, but you're already battle-tested, I guess, having played some D2 schools, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think those D2 schools in Florida definitely have helped us prepare for what's coming up this weekend. It's going to be a tough two matches, definitely, up against some great opponents. I'm super excited to play against Middlebury because I heard that they have indoor hard courts, which is basically like what I grew up playing on. So I'm excited for that. And also, I mean, our team has had such good energy going into the season that I'm excited for us to display that on court and even off court on these away matches. So yeah, it should be really, really fun.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about the team dynamic this year. Obviously, Allie Freeman's a really strong leader, senior captain. You mentioned, obviously, she missed these past few matches, but what's it like, you know, what's the team dynamic sort of like this season?
It's been great. Yeah, I think we've started off on a great note. I think, as I've mentioned already, the Florida trip has always been like integral to being able to set a team dynamic and a positive community, like, as our team. And I, with the help of the juniors, our junior captain, Drew Williams, mm-hmm. is one of our captains as well, and also just leadership, like, throughout the team. I think we have freshmen who are exhibiting, like, great leadership skills as well. And so, yeah, it's been really great. I think our team dynamic is super good and will be really important to some of these big matches that we're going to be playing.
It's kind of interesting because your schedule is so road heavy to start the year. I mean, you don't play a home match until April 13th with Bowdoin coming to town. By that time, you may be outside at Wallach Tennis Center, I mean, depending on the weather and everything. But what are your thoughts about, you know, it's kind of exciting, I guess, to have five straight home matches to end the year, but you got to get there first, right?
Yeah, I know. Last year we were lucky last year to have the majority of our matches home mm-hmm. in Merrill, which was super fun, and it definitely shocked our opponents when they came into the different surface. So this year we kind of had the other end of the stick where we're going to be on the other surfaces, maybe being shocked by the surface. But since, like, as we have showcased in our first two matches, I think that we'll be fine with it. And we've trained really, really hard in the investment season to be able to compete with these players and be better than them in the long run, hopefully.
Well, you mentioned investment season. That's, of course, you know, what head coach Paul Gascoigne likes to call the winter, between the fall and the spring, because you have some tournaments in the fall. But what is coach kind of like? I mean, he's a Bates alum, obviously. He knows what it takes to succeed here. What do you kind of learn from him over the, you know, past year plus, I suppose, right?
Yeah, he's awesome. I think all of the players really, really love him. I know that
I mean, he's been here forever. He knows the ins and outs of Bates tennis and also of these other schools that we've played, that we play in the NESCAC. And it's really, really helpful for him to be our coach, especially because he knows our experience as Bates students. Like, he did the academics, he did the tennis, he went to all these schools that we were playing to play as well. And then he also has his, like, ATP tournament experience. He was a pro player, he was a hitting partner, and he's been a coach. So it's been really, really awesome to have him. I think he's given us lots and lots of advice and tips to help us get better, and I feel like I've grown a lot as a player under his advisement. So
yeah, for you as a player, what are some goals you have kind of in your mind about what you want to see from yourself kind of as we move along this season?
Yeah, I mean, for doubles especially, I want to see us taking that doubles point in number two doubles. I'm really excited. I think that our energy's really there, and especially with some of these D2 schools that we played in Florida, we were right on the mark. So I think that that's going to translate into the season really, really well. For singles, I think that we're all doing a really, really good job at staying in the point and building the point. And I think that it would be really, really nice to see us all coming in and finishing at net and just kind of having fun with it. Like, sometimes it's hard to do that in tennis because it's kind of just such a like an analytical sport in certain ways. You just play the patterns until you have an opportunity to kind of go for your shot. And yeah, I think we just have to have fun building the point and have the energy and have the grit and determinedness to go for it, go out and win matches. So.
Excellent. Bella Saul, undefeated weekend for the women's tennis team and for you personally, taking on some NESCAC opponents this weekend on the road. Thanks so much for joining us on the Bobcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
On the baseball diamond, the Bobcats swept Plymouth State in a Sunday doubleheader, taking game one 10-1 and game two 14-6. Senior Sam Huff was outstanding in a complete game victory in game one, going the full seven innings and allowing just the one run on five hits and striking out three. Meanwhile, he did not walk anyone. So, Sam, your second start of the season, a complete game there against Plymouth State. You know, for you, like, what kind of major adjustments did you make, or if any, going from start one to start two to have such a great outing this past weekend here?
The biggest adjustment was controlling the run game better, and that basically just means being quicker to home plate and throwing off the base runner's timing to prevent stolen bases. And I also made sure to get ahead on hitters, zero balls, one strike, every time that I could.
First pitch strikes, excellent. And then take us through the game, kind of. I mean, were there any key moments that kind of stand out to you?
Definitely, yeah. I remember later in the game, a runner tried to advance from first to second after hitting a single, and Dylan threw him out at second base to get the second out, and that was very pivotal in ensuring that I could go out there for the seventh inning. What else? I had a few strikeouts to get the third outs of innings, and some phenomenal plays up the middle with shortstop and second base.
So the defense behind you was really sharp, it sounds like?
Absolutely.
Okay. We have Shaq Brennan at shortstop. Who's at second base for you guys?
Ben Genser.
Okay, gotcha. So they made some nice plays. Excellent. Mm-hmm. And also, nice to have some run support, right? I mean, a lot of runs in that Absolutely. Game for the Bobcat offense. What's it like when you're not pitching, watching these guys go to work?
Oh, it's super fun. I started off when I surrendered a run in the top of the first inning, and then Keegan Ryan hit like a mammoth home run in the left field off of a super impressive pitcher that Plymouth State featured. And, that was good vibes on the bench for sure.
Well, we saw, Keegan Ryan get his first collegiate home run. Jack Margloff, who's a sophomore, got his first collegiate home run as well, too. So what's the celebration like after those guys get their first long ball? Do you ignore them for a little bit, like we see the major leagues, or no?
No, it's hard to ignore them. It was too much pandemonium.
Too much pandemonium.
I was mobbing them when they came into the dugout, just beating their helmet and stuff.
Excellent. So I know for this team, you along with Teddy Nelson are fifth years, sort of, right? You took an extra year. So what's it like being kind of a fifth year senior?
You feel very old. I'm like 4 or 5 years older than some of the freshmen, and I'm just very glad to be back. I'm like super happy with that decision that we made to like defer the last year of eligibility. And it's feels nice to be like an older leader on the team.
And so for the team, I mean, what are some goals you guys kind of have this season in terms of, you know, what's it going to take to, you know, kind of break through the NESCAC? You guys had a winning season last year. It's just a matter of getting some of those NESCAC victories, right?
Yeah, that's going to come in a few weeks, NESCAC play.
Yeah.
I think just a personal goal that I have is getting better every day. And, like, I think if every single person on the team believes that, we can achieve, like, more than we know.
What pitch mix are you working with? What do we need to watch when once you guys are finally playing on Leahy Field here in a few weeks?
I throw a fastball for – like, I throw a pretty hard fastball and, like, a slower curveball that I kind of just flip in there for a strike when I need it. And then a swing-and-miss slider and a pretty good changeup, too.
Oh, nice. Is your fastball a four-seamer or two-seamer?
Four-seam.
Four-seam fastball. Okay, gotcha. If I recall, that's kind of your primary pitch, right? That's,
Yeah, and I would say the changeup is the go-to out pitch.
Excellent. Was the changeup working for you there against Plymouth State?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I had it.
Excellent. So four pitches there. And what's it like? Who have you been working with? Dylan mostly as your catcher, or do you have different catchers you work with?
Yeah, in practice, I'll throw to all of the catchers I've thrown to. And I threw to Brandon against Hampton Sydney, and then I just threw with Dylan this weekend. It just kind of depends on who like they need in the lineup, and I'm ready to go throw to whoever.
So after a pretty convincing doubleheader sweep of Plymouth State, who, you know, Bates and Plymouth State have had some close games for the year, what's it like to get two blowout wins, sort of?
Oh, it was satisfying.
Yeah.
And I know it felt good for our assistant coach, Coach LaFlame.
Oh, right.
He said that was super sweet for him, like, post-game, and he was very proud of all the work we, like, had put in, and, I was super excited to play for him today. Last weekend.
And Coach Flame is a Plymouth State alum, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right? Or he used to work there?
Both, I think.
Both, okay, gotcha. So extra satisfying for him. And then what's the team like this year? What's the group like? What kind of personalities are on this team?
I would say we're all pretty outspoken and honest with each other. We have fostered very good relationships throughout the years. And it's kind of you can see it in our dugout and on the field by like how comfortable we are with one another. It's an extremely like supporting environment too.
Excellent. Well, what are your thoughts on the two games against Plymouth State and what you're most looking forward to here? Yeah, I guess you got more road trips coming up. I think, but you're in upstate New York this weekend, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be nice. That's around where I'm from.
Okay.
So I'll have some family and some friends at that game. At those games, as for like any other thoughts from Plymouth State, I was it was super fun to watch like the bats clicking, and we were facing some some difficult starting pitching, and we flourished. It was super impressive.
Awesome. And then, of course, complete game for you. That's your third career complete game. I remember the other two distinctly, that Skidmore 9-1 where you threw like 100,000 pitches. So you take a lot of pride in finishing those games.
Yeah. It's my game. When I'm clicking like that, I want the ball for the rest of the game.
Absolutely. Sam Huff, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Next time on the Bates Bobcast, we'll recap the national championships for skiing, track and field, and squash. Plus, we'll look back on the women's basketball team's trip to Rhode Island College for what they hope will be a pair of victories. If they do win twice, that means a trip to the Final Four in Columbus, Ohio. Make sure you stick with GoBatesBobcats.com for all the latest Bates Athletics news. And we'll catch you next time on the Bates Bobcast.